ready for takeoff.
Welcome to the Remote CEO Show. My name is De Niro Bartolini, aka De Niro B. I'm an acclaimed business coach, and my moonshot is to change the face of work and business forever. With each episode, we bring you some of the most inspiring and insightful interviews with 6, 7, 8, and 9-figure entrepreneurs to crack the code on how to build your remote empire and have fun while doing it. Thanks for stopping by, and let's get started.
What's going on, CEOs? De Niro B here with another episode of the Remote CEO Show. Today, I'm here with Sean Campbell. Sean has been training, mentoring, and educating all his life. He's exceptionally well-regarded conference speaker and author, and he has delivered talks for Fortune 50 companies and top-tier conferences. He's also been the author of several books on technical as well as business topics. I'm super excited for this chat. Let's get right into it. Sean, welcome to the Remote CEO Show. How are you doing today?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I ask every single one of my guests to tell us a bit more about themselves and what made them become an entrepreneur. So, Sean, what is your story?
I didn't necessarily want to be an entrepreneur. I was going to go be a college professor. That's what I was going to go do. And I still have that as a passion of mine. I've been an adjunct in an MBA program. I'll hopefully return to that again at some point now that my kids are adulting. But that was what I set out to do. And for a number of reasons, which I don't necessarily need to get into, but they're all positive ones. One reason involves a girl that ended up becoming my wife, although she was very supportive of whatever track I was going to go take. I said, you know, I'd like to go get a job, not in academia, after I finished my master's degree. And so anyway, I ended up becoming a technical instructor back when that was kind of a term in the early aughts in the late 90s. And so I trained a lot of people on Microsoft technology back in the era of their kind of ultimate dominance, when 97% of everything we used was Microsoft. And basically left that and said, I really like teaching, and I always have. And I said, I want to become an independent instructor. And that was the start of my first entrepreneurial journey, is basically being an instructor that was paid, but I was independent. And I formed a company with a couple other guys. Basically, we built that company up and eventually sold it. And obviously, there's parts of that journey that are interesting and stuff like that. That lasted for about 6 years. And then I started Cascade about 18 years ago. And that's been the second business that I've owned. And it's, so I've been self-employed with a team for 24 years now.
24 years. This is a fantastic story. I want you to take us back to when you were scaling your first business, or maybe even second, depending on what stories you got to tell us there. But not a lot of people that are listening to this podcast are building a remote team and they're trying to make the first hires. They may have a very small budget, so they don't want to make mistakes of hiring the wrong person. How did you go about that? Can you tell us the pros and cons of what happened to you, and maybe getting some lessons that you've learned the hard way?
It's a good question. I was doing remote long before it was cool. I mean, when we had a remote company in 1999, when we started Three Leaf Solutions, it was a negative. It was absolutely a negative. Why don't you have an office? What do you mean you're working from your basement? I mean, we romanticize it even a little bit, you know, the idea of like HP getting started in their garage and, you know, all this stuff. But honestly, that was not a positive in the lion's share of cases. So there were technology issues to surmount. We didn't have nearly the same technology. I mean, everything was conducted via phone calls, right? Anyway, long and short of it is you do have different eras of remote, I think, for sure. You know, the early aughts, mid aughts, you know, 2000 to, you know, maybe even 2010, it was progressively becoming more accepted, but it never quite even then crossed the chasm. It always seemed a little more real to have an office. And to anybody listening, I have had offices at two different times in each company. So one time in one company and one in the other. So I'm fully aware of the other side and its gives and gets. Yep. And I think hiring is definitely a challenging one. I think onboarding, I would say, is actually more challenging. I think hiring is challenging in a way, but you know, you can put processes in place, and we keep evolving what we're doing, right? You know, from how many interviews or who's involved, or the, you know, now we do like video ask. Like if anybody's familiar with that platform, we ask people to submit video responses to questions via video ask. And like we do different things to kind of weed out who makes the most sense.
Yeah.
And as a side note too, you know, nothing against anybody who ever wants to get a job. But I would just say as a business owner, we're on kind of a weird side of the ledger when it comes to hiring. In other words, all of the tools now are so automated to allow anyone to apply to anything. And the platforms are incented to do that, frankly, right? Because what does LinkedIn exist to do? It exists to help us all find a job. I mean, it does many things, but fundamentally, that's what it's there for. Yeah. And so if you're an employer, you're sometimes just inundated in even a small company like us. I put up a job posting. I have hundreds of applicants within 2 days. Frankly, like 89% of them, if this was the real world setting and they had to walk in and hand me a resume and justify why they're a fit, they wouldn't even try.
Yeah, that's true.
They wouldn't even try, right? But they'll punch a button that says, I'd like to apply. Now, by the way, that's not me upset about that. I just say that there's a time commitment there. So I think it's definitely a huge issue, and it's amplified by being remote because anybody from anywhere in the US can apply, right, for us. Yeah. I would say onboarding's the toughest though. And I think that's for a few reasons. And then we could dig into these if you want. I'd say onboarding's tough because one, it is really on the new hire to admit when they don't know something. And that sounds so simple, right? But I will time and time and time again, I will tell people through the interview process over and over and over again, we are here to support you, but in a remote company, you have to admit when you are stuck. And what will happen pretty much every time is a couple weeks in, they'll be like, yeah, I could have admitted sooner I was stuck. And I think it's because in most cultures, in-person office cultures, the way you admit you're stuck, and I think this is fundamental to the difference of onboarding, the way you admit you're stuck in an office environment is much more casual. It feels much more safe, right? You kind of lean over the wall to Bob and you say, I don't really sure what to do next, right? Or to Mary. And that's maybe not your boss. But in a remote company, what do you have to do usually to admit you don't know what you're doing? Well, you have to write it down. Because it's an async operation usually. Most interactions in a remote company begin asynchronously. They don't have to begin asynchronously. Sure, you can pick up the phone, and we recommend everybody does that all the time, and we do plenty of it. But just the nature of it, you're in different time zones or whatever, so you send a Slack message, you send an email. And it feels a lot more formal, I think, to a new hire to say, I'm unclear in writing.
Yes.
Than it is that more casual environment. And so as a business owner, I think you have to work, I would say literally every single day in their first 30 days to make it absolutely clear. You can do that. You can do it safely. You can do it with detail. There won't be any consequences. And it sounds so elemental, but I can tell you it happens over and over again. And I'm a nice guy, so I don't think anybody's like frightened of me. You know, I don't think that's the issue. I think it's just we're used to a certain way of admitting when we don't understand a process. And remote makes that hard because you have to write it down and you feel like it's just going to go in your employee file or something like that. So that's one of the bigger things just to start.
That's super interesting. You just brought this up. I've never really had anybody bring this angle to the table. It's very interesting because like you said, it's just even a culture. It's not necessarily you or the person like that's, you know, like managing the team. It's just the idea of other companies, you know, the culture that they've experienced working at other companies. I remember reading Ray Dalio's book about, he says that it takes about 18 months for people to get used to their company's culture because it's just different the way that they operate. And when you run a remote business and someone's coming from an in-person job, working for an in-person business, definitely they need to have that reminder, especially at the very beginning. It's very interesting. Now, when it comes to different time zones, talking about asynchronous work and everything else, what was worked for you? Do you try and look for talent locally or at least in the same time zone for, you know, to make things easier, possibly for team building opportunities? Or would you rather go and look for talent worldwide? And when you go global, obviously, though, there's going to be other problems.
Well, let me inject a really... what I hope is an interesting little sidebar before I answer that, because I think it's right at the heart of it. I saw this newsletter this guy writes on Substack. I can't remember the name. I want to say it's Uncharted Territories or something. But anyway, the guy did this great piece where he said, cities are changing. Now, this isn't the angle of like the downtown core argument is devolving or whatever. This is different. So cities are changing because of remote. And the argument was that if you go back as far as you want in history, and I'm a history guy, which is probably why I remember this, is, you know, the size of the city was constrained by how far people could travel in a half an hour.
Yeah.
This has been true throughout history. There's a name for it. It's like a constant. I forget the name of it. But, and so, sure, you had cities that were a little bigger, a little smaller, but in medieval times, that was where why the wall was where it was. Or now, you jump forward and you look at Atlanta in the U.S., which is usually considered, sorry to those who live in Atlanta, kind of like the perfect example of suburban sprawl in America. Yeah. And that's because we all have cars, right? And so what is a half an hour? Well, it's very different. And he made the argument that we still have, getting to your point about is it global or local, he says we're still going to have that, but it might be more continent level. And that's kind of the way I look at it. I think at some point, it's really hard to work with a team collectively once you span four or so time zones. Mm-hmm. And it also is multiplied by the fact that the clients aren't in the same time zones, right? So you get a client who's in Australia, and then you got a team, you know, it gets hard. I think it's hard to keep a singular culture. For us, we do a yearly in-person offsite.
Nice.
I've thought about doing another like kind of worktation kind of thing, if you're familiar with that term, you know, like maybe we're a couple of the times a year we get together in a city.
Yeah.
I don't really feel like it's necessary, but I thought it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
But I think that's my lens. Like it's U.S. centric only because there's a large body of water to the west of me. I don't really have the option. I mean, I could hire somebody in Alaska, but even when somebody applied from Hawaii at one point, and this wasn't a good candidate anyway, so it was kind of immaterial, but yeah. I had a candidate apply from Hawaii once, and I looked at it and I was like, all right, so there's like an hour and a half in the day when we can all have our sync meetings because I got people on the East Coast, right? And so I think I think he hit it right in that article. He's like, it's not a half an hour anymore, but it may be continent, which is still dramatic, right? And that has all kinds of societal impacts and things like that that we've honestly yet to shake out, frankly. And one footnote on that, I'd say the thing I keep waiting for, and I see little blips of it, but I don't see anybody as invested, and maybe it's out there and I just never came across it yet, but I'd love to see cities in remote areas like make a full court press of we're a 10,000 person town with great schools and a great culture and scenery, and we've built the world's best fiber network, you know, and you come live here and start a company here, and we don't care how many of your people live here. And I think the reason you don't hear that as much, because immediately somebody says, well, what are we going to do about taxes, right? You know, and where how are we going to get money out of, and that's a legit question, I guess. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing like cities kind of really fight for remote employees. Mm-hmm. I've yet to see that in earnest, but I think we will. I think there's going to be some smart mayors who are going to wake up one day and say, a factory would be nice, but it'd be more awesome to have a bunch of remote CEOs living here. And yeah. We might do better as a result of that than if we just got the factory.
100%. This is a very interesting point that you're making. There's a lot to unpack here. First thing that I wanted to ask you, first off, actually, I do want to talk about the fact that if you own a business like I do right now, we're based in Toronto, Canada, but I've been living from Europe for the past few months, and it's been crazy because the majority of my clients are in North America between Pacific and Eastern time. And I am in Central European, which is 6 to 9 hour difference. And let me tell you, I work nights sometimes and I don't like that. The only reason why I get myself to wake up every morning and do it is because I definitely love my lifestyle when I'm not working. But if I had to choose, I would definitely like to work in the morning like I used to when I was in Toronto. Let's put it that way. But the second thing that I wanted to talk to you about, and I wanted to ask you this question, there's after COVID, so you went from late 90s, early 2000s, all the way obviously to pre-COVID and after COVID. I find that after COVID, a lot of people are trying to get remote jobs just because they don't want to leave the house. To me, that's the wrong reason to look for a remote job. So how do you make sure, first off, if there's any systems that you have in place to avoid even getting in touch with these individuals that are just looking for remote jobs for the wrong reasons? And second of all, how do you notice or find out maybe in the interview process or in the application process if someone is actually looking for a position with your company because they are a good fit and they do believe they're a good fit even though it's remote, or again, just because they don't have to leave their living room when they wake up in the morning?
Well, I think what you're getting at is like, things that maybe we always should look for, right? I mean, we should look for motivation and skill and tenacity and a willingness to lean into the job and the right capabilities. All of that is obviously true, right? And I think you're equally correct that you have to watch out for what the motivation is to do remote. And it's a tough one, because on one level, you want people that want remote. You want people who say, it'd be really nice if I have some flex time and I can get up and ski for a couple hours and then go to work.
Yeah.
You want that. It's a selling point, frankly. Mm. On the other hand, it can be taken to an extreme. And I personally don't feel like I'm worried if they want remote. I'm just looking for the characteristics of somebody who will succeed in remote. And I think that some people are very unaware of that. I think that's the biggest thing. That it's definitely a different way of working. And candidates are sometimes blissfully unaware of how far they can predict their future selves. And so I think you got to do a lot of homework and ask them some good questions and see where they stand. But even then, you can have mistakes. I mean, we've had people who've come here and they're like, I like the job, I just don't like the remote. Right?
Yeah. Oh, okay. So yeah, that makes sense. And when it comes to, again, making sure that everybody is on the same page, like you said, everybody is local. So do you have a lot of meetings, or do you like your team to have their own meetings by department? How do you structure your kind of like your employees' days? And are they more flexible, or do they need to stick to a certain time in and out?
I mean, our policy is you can pretty much flex whatever you want within a 2-week window. That's the cap we put on it. You know, in other words, like I've had employees who come on board say, well, what if I work, you know, like crazy for X number of days because I want to save up 3 days and not use PTO? And I understand the intent there, but all jobs have to be done to a degree of moderation, right? We all burn out. We all don't do as great a job when we're working 20-hour days, right? You know, so,
yep.
And much less if, and the other argument here in consulting is, well, you can't always predict, you know, client expectations. And so maybe I need to burn the midnight oil a little longer. And so then I want to be able to take it off. And my argument there is, well, I want to get ahead of that. I want to figure out what was causing that to begin with, not create a culture where that's the way we fix the problem all the time. So I want a much more sustainable culture. So for us, everybody gets the message within a 2-week window, your hours have to level out. So if you like in 1 week, and we aim for like a roughly 40-hour week around here, right? So, you know, say 1 week you dip down to 30, I would like you to balance that out by the end of the next week. And so what that inherently means is I think people end up taking 2-3 hours here and there, but they're not radically changing their schedule. And part of that is the kind of work we're doing, because we do consulting for large technology companies. We don't have the ability to disappear from them for days on end as a team, because they'll ask us a question and they would reasonably expect our organization to get back to them with an answer within a day or two.
Yeah.
And the problem with remote isn't that one person's gone. It's that sometimes if you don't plan it right, you're never all together enough to make a collective decision. Right. And there's other types of jobs where that wouldn't be as an issue. You know, if you're writing code and building apps and your goals are distributed and, you know, you're a developer kind of doing, you got a roadway ahead of you and you know what you're going to go build. Okay, well, you can be maybe a lot more flexible. Yeah. But for what we do have to convene pretty regularly. And other than that, it's nothing out of the ordinary. You know, I try to schedule meetings that are kind of middle of the day, time zone wise.
Okay.
Try to be respectful of people when they get in early or late. You know, there's a little bit of that. And it gets a little sticky with clients sometimes, because you'll have clients will be like, well, why can't we meet after 2? And I'm like, well, because your project leads on the East Coast. And sometimes I have to step in and, because clients, I love clients.
Yeah,
too. But yeah. Clients don't really care about those things. They might signal that they do, but they really don't. So as an owner, you have to defend your team. Because otherwise what'll happen is the employee is left to negotiate with the client who's like, come on, why can't we meet after 2 Pacific? And before you know it, the client's like having a client meeting at 6:30 when they should be having dinner with their kids because they're East Coast. So I think for me, I try to do a lot of overwatch on that to try to make sure that nobody's accepting unreasonable requests right? Because our clients are global organizations in some cases. It's not like they don't get it, mm-hmm. right? And so there's a bit of negotiation there that has to happen.
100%. Listen, I have so many other questions. I don't think we have enough time today, but I'm sure that my listeners will want to know more about you, your company. What I want to do, though, before that, Sean, can you tell if there's anything exciting coming down the pike, whether it be your personal brand or anything else that you want to share with our audience?
I just love everything we're doing with Gen AI. I mean, we are a very AI-powered research firm, and part of that is who we serve, the research community inside technology companies. But I would just tell people the biggest thing you should be doing with your day is like literally blocking out an hour every day and exploring and using these tools, because we're going to get to a point where the organizations that have embraced these tools and remote companies, I think, are ideally suited to embrace these tools in some ways, mm-hmm. are simply just going to outperform everybody else. And you need to get your whole staff trained and focus on them. And it goes beyond just like hanging out ChatGPT and throwing prompts. But that's what I'm most excited about. I mean, we've saved time in so many places. We've built better outputs. We've done all kinds of cool things. And if folks are curious about that, we've been blogging about that and stuff like that too. They could check it out. But yeah, that's what I'm most excited about.
Sean, that's amazing. I'm actually going to ask you one last follow-up question there, because I know that we use it as a consulting firm ourselves. We're using AI to do a lot of things in the marketing world. But if someone was home right now and was trying to figure out, where do I even start to look? I mean, obviously you can Google AI power tools or AI tools, but what would you recommend is the best way or a better, more structured way to start exploring AI as a solopreneur or as a small business at scaling?
I think the smartest thing you can do is when you're about to do something, ask yourself, can the AI help me do it? I mean, it's the simplest and the most straightforward way, because you can start probably with just communication. Communication is the easiest place, right? No one should send a grammatically incorrect mail ever.
Yeah.
Period. Right? From Grammarly to ChatGPT to the Copilot in your Outlook, take your pick of what you use for an email client. Your communication right now, marketing comm, sales comm, every bit of it should be tack sharp. Now there's the issue of intent, like the intent and kind of the motivational aspects of it. That still comes a lot from the human, because you know who you're writing to, yeah. right? But yeah, I would say communication is the easiest place. Look at how you're communicating and see how these tools can help across the whole business. And the other place I would say is, if there's any kind of just data analysis you are trying to do, like you're staring at a spreadsheet and you're like, I need to know if Y correlates with X, some of these tools make that incredibly easy. And everybody, and I would say this, everybody stares at an Excel spreadsheet in business probably 7 times a day, right? And for better or worse, right? Depending on who you are. And so I think those kinds of things, and eventually you build up this kind of toolbox of actions that are now AI powered. And then of course there's things you can do beyond that are more operational level. And I think once you've done that, then you have a lot of examples to share with everybody else. And everybody else is now moving just a little bit faster and a little bit more effective. And it's funny how that works. And I'll give you one last concrete example that we'll drop is I had one of our employees was trying to edit a PowerPoint deck, had a lot of speaker notes in it. We build a lot of PowerPoint decks. We're a research firm. And so there were speaker notes, or I forget if they were just notes in there. I can't remember which. And the classic move would be to open every slide, delete, 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 kind of thing. Yeah. And what they did is they went to ChatGPT and they said, well, how would I get rid of all the slide notes? And it spit out in a second, the VBA code.
Yeah.
Told the employee how to run it in PowerPoint. And 3 seconds later, all of the notes were gone. Well, there was an hour just saved. Kaboom.
Wow. Yeah.
But you have to have the mentality, right? Your employees have to have the mentality that they're going to ask, is it possible?
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to, I think, orient people to that. And honestly, that's the biggest thing, be a huge advocate for it if you're a leader and practice it yourself, right? Show people examples of how you're using it.
100%. Absolutely love chatting with you, Sean. I'm very excited for our listeners to listen to this podcast episode and obviously know more about you and your firm. So where can people find you online, Sean?
Just go to cascadeinsights.com. You'll find me, you'll find the company, you'll find stuff we're talking about and that's AI related and market research related. So just check us out there.
That's great. Sean, again, thank you very much for being at the Remote CEO Show. I'm looking forward to having you back in the future. And in the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, man.
And this is it for today, CEOs. Thanks for staying with us until the end. Can I ask you a big favor? Can you please leave a review? I know the podcast app is not super straightforward. So if you don't know how to leave a review, just DM me on Instagram at DeNiroB, DeNiroB. And I will send you the direct link to the review section. And to show you my appreciation, I will answer any business question you ask me during that conversation. So thank you again, and I will talk to you again soon.